This morning's reading is from Luke chapter 9. When Jesus had called the 12 together, he gave them power and authority to drive out all demons and to cure diseases. And he sent them out to preach the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. He told them, "Take nothing for the journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra tunic. Whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave the town. If people do not welcome you, shake the dust off your feet when you leave that their town as a testimony against them." So they set out and went from village to village, preaching the gospel and healing the people everywhere. Now Herod the Tetrarch heard about all of the goings on, and he was perplexed. Because some of them were saying John had been raised from the dead, others said Elijah had appeared, and still others that the prophets of long ago had come back to life. But Herod said, "I beheaded John. Who then is this I hear about such things?" And he tried to see you. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Have you ever been given a job to do or a task to complete, but not given the tools or resources that you need in order to be able to do it properly? It's a nightmare, isn't it? I can remember, and this is 20 years ago now, which is frightening for me to think about, but at that point, I was working part-time for a church, and I was also a supply teacher. And I went into various different schools and did supply teaching, and mostly it was absolutely fine, except for the day when I went to Whitstable Community College. And it was the day from hell. I arrived at the school to discover that the reason that the teacher who I was covering was off was because her classes had driven her into such stress and anxiety that she was gone. I then discovered that there were no lesson plans or any description of anything that I was meant to do with the various classes that day. I then discovered that my classroom was in a small porter cabin on the other side of the field. It was literally 200 metres from any building, except, I noted with gladness, for at least one other porter cabin that was just next door. So I trudged across the field, reflecting on the fact that I'd only been teaching for a few months. I was still very green. My eyesight back then was better than it is now, but I still couldn't see all that well. I didn't have a clue what the classes were coming to me. I didn't have the faintest idea what lessons I was meant to teach and how I was going to do it. As I arrived, a middle-aged male teacher emerged from the neighbouring porter cabin looking worn and haggard. And without any introduction, I kid you not, he just said to me, "Don't come running to me if you have any problems with those kids. I've got enough problems of my own." So I went into this classroom and I had nothing. I didn't have any of the tools or the resources that I needed. And it was as horrific as you might have expected. A bunch of year 10s came in first, and I've taught some difficult classes in my time, but these kids were feral. Throughout the course of the next hour, one of them had broken the legs off a chair, several of them had thrown their calculators at the wall. It was a math class. They had them with them, at least at the start of the lesson. By the end, they were all smashed to smithereens. One of the girls kept flashing the rest of the class. No one did any work. There was foul and abusive language being thrown all over the place. Let me tell you, I have never prayed as hard as I did during that hour. The only tiny victory I had was that I decided there was no way I was going to let them go to their break before we'd had a minute of quiet. So as the school bell rang and this kind of herd of wildebeest charged towards the door, I strode across and slammed it shut just as two lads got there and pulled it open. And we had a very surreal 20 seconds where I was holding it closed with all my might and they were pulling it open with all their might. And praise the Lord, I was stronger than they were. And I made them sit back in their chairs in silence for 60 seconds before I let them go. The rest of the day did not go much better. The next day, I was teaching in the very posh Simon Langton Boys Grammar School in Canterbury, and I had a Year 7 class to start with, and I bellowed at them, "We are not going to have any messing around today. There will be no talking in this lesson." And after about 20 minutes, I said, "Okay, you can talk a little bit. That's fine." So I know a bit about what it's like to be sent out without the tools and resources that you need to do the job that you've been given. And that must have been what it felt like for those disciples in the story that Chris has just read to us. Jesus sends them out to go and proclaim the good news in neighboring towns and villages. But then he says to them, "And by the way, you're not going to take a staff for any kind of support. You don't need any, don't take any bread or food. Don't bother with money. And no, don't take any spare clothes, just what you've got. And so, probably not worth taking a bag because you haven't got anything to take with you after all anyway." Why is Jesus sending these lads out? And let's not forget, they're lads. These are teenagers, almost certainly. Maybe even 13, 14, 15-year-olds, these disciples. Peter, probably the eldest of them all. He might have been 18 or 19. He was already married. But these are young lads. They've been with Jesus only a very short amount of time. And here he is, sending them off and not letting them take anything with them. What is going on? Well, we're going to have a look. And as we do so, I want us to be thinking about how this relates to us today in 21st century Hedge End. Jesus is sending these disciples out on their first mission trip. So I want us to think, well, what does this have to say to us about our mission and evangelism today? As we do that, I think it's helpful to have a little bit of context. We read towards the end of this passage that Herod the Tetrarch, who is the local ruler, Herod the Great's son, one of his sons, he has obviously begun to hear rumours about who Jesus is. But he doesn't know anything more than that, and clearly nor do his administrators, because they can't tell him. There are rumours, there's rumours that it's John the Baptist, but Herod knows for darn sure it's not John the Baptist because he chopped his head off a few weeks ago. And people are saying, well, maybe it's Elijah or another prophet come back from the dead. So what we know is that Jesus was not well known at this point in his ministry. There were simply rumours going around about him. He was, if you will, a 2002 pre-season Wayne Rooney. Bear with me on this one. You probably didn't think you'd come to church today and hear Jesus being compared to Wayne Rooney. Maybe you think he's more of a goalkeeper in that, he saves. He also does good work on crosses, and he quite likes nets. Anyway, I'm going with Wayne Rooney, a pre-season Wayne Rooney. So obviously we all know Wayne Rooney now. We probably know far too much about Wayne and Colleen Rooney and their spat with the Vardys and so on. And we know all about Wayne Rooney's achievements. But in 2002 in pre-season, no one knew anything about him. But I can remember as an Everton fan just hearing these rumours and hints about this 15-year-old kid who could work wonders with his right foot. And people whispered it on the AstroTurf as we kicked a ball around. There were just tiny snippets in newspapers. But I didn't know at that point that Wayne Rooney would make his debut for Everton not long after, that he'd score a wonder goal against Arsenal, that he'd get transferred for big money to Man United, that he'd become Man United and England's top scorer of all time, at least until Harry Kane overtakes him shortly. It's funny to think back and think we didn't know anything about him then. And that is how Jesus was at this time. It's hard for us to gauge because we, you know, as people who come to church, we know a lot about Jesus. But at this point, it was just hints and rumours. People had heard of this guy doing, performing miracles and preaching up a storm and then calming a storm. But they didn't know much about him. And you know what? Actually, it's not that dissimilar today. And so as the disciples went out to people who knew hints and rumours about Jesus, so we actually, as we seek to live missionally, as we seek to tell people the good news about Jesus, we go out into a world who only know hints and rumours. They know the name, but they know surprisingly little else very often. I know that when we do work in in schools and so on, it's extraordinary how little they know, even of the Christmas story and the Easter story, let alone anything else. So perhaps our context isn't all that different to the ones in which the disciples were being sent out. So, what else can we learn? In verse 2, we're told, Jesus sent out the disciples to proclaim the good news and to heal the sick. So the first thing is that they were sent out. And this, of course, reflects God's mission. God sent Jesus to come to us. And then Jesus didn't perform his ministry by being stuck in an ivory tower somewhere and expecting people to come to him. He went to where the people were at. And at this very early juncture, he models that for his disciples too. He says, go to where the people are. Don't expect them to come to you. And that is still the same for us today. We are a sent out people. If all we do is sit in our cozy little church and sing nice little songs and feel smug about the fact that we're in the in crowd, we're no use to anyone. We are a sent out people. We are called to meet people where they are at. And that's both a physical thing in terms of actually we need to get out of this building and go and be a beacon of light in our community. But it's also a mental thing. We need to think about being sent out, about meeting people where they are at. And of course we can do that here in our building, and we do so with things like Encounter and Minnows and our youth cafe and so on. So people do come here, but we're acting in a sent out kind of a way because we are seeking to meet people where they are at, not get them to come and immediately be on our terms. So firstly, we are sent out. The second thing is that Jesus says to the disciples, go and proclaim the good news and heal the sick. Right from the beginning, this is about word and deed. This is about declaring and demonstrating. This is about telling people about the good news of Jesus, but also showing them that it really is good news. Quite often, if we just declare the good news, it doesn't sound very much like good news to people. It's one of the very many reasons why I'm not a big fan of people standing on street corners and bellowing at people. It doesn't sound like good news. Actually, we're called to demonstrate the good news too. And for the disciples in this instance, that was about healing the sick. Of course, they lived in a society where people lived short, hard lives characterized by illness and disease. So healing the sick was a really clear sign of God's love and his compassion and his power. Now, I'd argue, actually, that things are a bit different today, and despite the fact it's almost impossible to get a GP appointment, we have incredible wealth of medical assistance available to us. So perhaps healing the sick isn't quite as important as it was in Jesus' time. But what are the other ways that we can demonstrate the goodness of God? How do we do that? I think it's about finding out what people's needs are and meeting them in those needs. It's one of the reasons why being involved with the food bank is so wonderful, because we are meeting people in their need. It's why youth cafes are amazing, because the kids come here, we meet their need for pizza, which is a very important need, and for a safe space to hang out. So we're demonstrating the goodness of God. It's the same with the Snowdrop Care Home Ministry. Liz and the team go in there and they are being a blessing to the people in that place. And that then gives us, as it were, the right to be able to then tell people the good news too. So, demonstrating the good news and declaring it go hand in hand. And we mustn't get too lost in one or the other. So we're sent out and we're called to demonstrate and declare the good news. And then we get to this bit where Jesus says to them, and by the way, you can't take anything with you. No staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no spare tunic. Why is Jesus doing that to this group of young lads who haven't been with him long and are going out into this strange world who don't really know anything about Jesus? Well, I think we need to take a balanced approach to how we view this. So firstly, I think it's clear that God was asking the disciple to take a risk. And he asks us to do that too. If we're going to be people of the light, we have to be willing to take risks. If we wait until we think we've got all the tools and all the resources at our disposal before we demonstrate and declare the good news, we'll never do it. Because we'll never think we've got all the answers. Well, we shouldn't think we've got all the answers. Maybe some of us do. But we're never going to have all the answers. We're never going to be completely settled and sorted in our own lives. And God doesn't ask us to be. In fact, he asks us just to be ourselves, to be the people that he is calling us to be. And as we do that, we will be beacons of light in our families, in our neighborhoods, at our schools, at work, in our communities. We're never going to be set, so we do need to be willing to take risks. However, I don't think that means that we should always just, you know, we should never bother to plan, we should just be completely impetuous and just go off and do crazy things which don't make any sense. Actually, later on in Luke's Gospel, in chapter 22, verse 35, Jesus is chatting with his disciples, and he says to them, do you remember that time when I sent you out and I didn't let you take staff or satchel or any money with you? And they say, yep, we remember. He said, did you lack for anything? And they say, no, we lacked for nothing. Jesus had a plan when he was sending them out. It's slightly unclear. In the next verse, he talks about the homes that they're going to go to. So it's possible, I think, that actually he prepared those places for them to go. We don't know that for sure. But Jesus had a plan there. And then he goes on in the next verse to say, but I tell you now, take a purse. Take spare clothes. And then rather more cryptically, if you haven't got a sword, sell your cloak and take a sword with you. We haven't got time to look into that now, but we'll get to it in our journey through Luke. But so do you see that? So he's saying, back then I said, go, just go. But now I'm saying, take stuff with you, get ready and go. So I think we need to be willing to take risks, but we need to be discerning about when we do that. And that's part of what it is to be a church together. We can weigh those risks up for one another. We can help one another as we're seeking to work out what God might be calling us to. So we're sent out. We're called to demonstrate and declare. We're called to take risks with discernment. So then, Jesus says, go to those houses and don't go door to door to lots of other houses. Just stay in the one place in each town or village. Now, what he's referring to here is that at the time, loads of disciples of rabbis would go out to spread the good news about their rabbi and give their particular teaching. But they would go door to door. And as well as telling people, you know, the good news, they'd also want some food, some clothes, and some shelter. Actually, they became a burden to the people that they were going to. Jesus is encouraging his disciples here not to be a burden. Go to the places where you're being welcomed in, where perhaps Jesus has prearranged it. Don't go door to door, just be a blessing. So when we're thinking about being mission and evangelism, we must make sure that what we're doing is being a blessing to people, not a burden. It's another reason why I don't like people shouting on street corners. It's very burdensome to people trying to do their shopping on a Saturday morning. Actually, we're called to be a blessing. A great example of that is the Open the Book ministry that we have here and that happens around the country. So Open the Book does dramatized readings. We go into schools and do their assemblies for them, doing dramatized Bible stories. And it's wonderful. And we get to demonstrate and declare the good news. And we do it whilst being a blessing. It's a blessing to the children because they get an interesting assembly, which they might not always get the rest of the time. And they love these assemblies, let me tell you. But we're also being a blessing to the school, to the teachers and the head teacher, because we're helping them to reach their quota for the religious assemblies that they have to do. So Open the Book is first and foremost a blessing, which is why we're welcomed in. And then, because of that, we're able to demonstrate and declare the good news. So as we think about in our own lives and in the life of our church, how we might want to let people know the wonderful news of Jesus, let's make sure that we're being a blessing and not a burden. And then finally, Jesus says this really interesting thing. He says, if they don't accept what you're saying, that's okay. Just shake the dust off your feet and move on to the next place. Now, you might be interested to know that I have had people shake the dust off their feet at me. When I was a curate in Folkestone, I organised a science and religion evening, and we invited a Cambridge Don to come down. He was a professor of chemistry, I think, but also a Christian, and he came to speak about the interrelation between science and faith. He was brilliant. He was called Rodney Holder, and let me tell you, it was so hard to not call him Noddy. But anyway, he was called Rodney Holder. He was great, and he did a talk, and then we had a question and answer session, which I was chairing. We had maybe 60 or 70 people in the room, and three of them were a family, a mum and dad and a teenage boy. And it became apparent fairly early on that they were staunch seven-day creationists. Absolutely fine, it's not my theology, but I have absolute respect for that. That's absolutely fine. They were very welcome there. But what was not welcome was the fact that as soon as the question and answer session started, they began shouting aggressive questions and not giving poor Rodney the chance to answer, and then wouldn't let anyone else ask any questions and just kept shouting their questions and then just shouting random, well, probably not random, but shouting a whole variety of different Bible verses, which I presume they thought backed up their particular claim. And it got to the point where I gave them several chances just to let someone else have a chance and let Rodney answer. But they just wouldn't. So in the end, I had to ask them to leave because it wasn't fair on anyone else. I think it's the only time I've ever asked anyone to leave any kind of church event. But as they went, with everyone watching them, they stood in the double doorway to the church hall, and in a clearly kind of choreographed exercise, they stood there and very flamboyantly brushed the dust off their feet before leaving. And I imagine they thought that they were following Jesus' instructions here, that the rest of us there were not receiving their particular truth, and that was a testimony against us. But actually, I don't think that's exactly what Jesus meant when he said this. I think what he is saying is more like that the responsibility, the burden of how people respond is not upon the disciples and is not upon us. Sometimes people will not respond in the way that we would hope they will to what we are saying and doing. And that's okay. That's their responsibility and God's responsibility. It's not ours. We can shake the dust off and move on to something different. And that is such a release because it means that, at least in the context of how people respond, there's no failure. We don't need to be nervous about demonstrating and declaring the good news because in the end, it's not our responsibility how people respond. That's theirs and God's. So, let's remember that we are sent out, that we're called to demonstrate and declare the good news of our loving God, that we do need to be willing to take risks, but that we should do that with discernment, that we should be a blessing and not a burden, and that we don't need to bear the responsibility of how people respond. My hope is that as we let that, all of that seep into our lives, that we would be inspired to live missional lives. And we do that as a church gathered with events that we put on, like some of those I've already mentioned, Minnows and Encounter and Youth Cafe and Snowdrop Care Home and Food Bank and Open the Book and so on. And there may well be other things that God is calling us to. And if you are feeling a nudge about something that God might be calling us to, hallelujah, come and talk to me or Liz or Clive. We would love to chat about that. We're also going to be running an Alpha course in January. So if you'd like to be involved with that in any way, again, come and chat to us. So we want to be continually looking for where is God calling us to as a church. But then also, let's not forget that we are still church when we are not together. We are church dispersed. And actually, the most fruitful way for us to be a light in our community is doing that as we go from here, in our families, in our workplaces, at school, in our communities, in our networks. And we don't have to have all the right answers. We don't have to have perfect theology. We don't have to have big, loud voices. God calls each of us in our own way to live missional lives for him, to be his sent out people. And the good news is that evangelism, which is a frightening word that we often shy away from, is not, in the end, like being sent to a porter cabin in Whitstable Community College. We go out equipped, encouraged, and led by Jesus in the knowledge that, in the end, it's all down to him anyway. Amen.